you actually have the ability to almost be like a second mother for your student. Someone stopped me and they said, oh, your son. And I said, I only have daughters. This is not my son. And they said, but you're always with this little boy. And I said, he's just my student, but I take it as a compliment that you felt that the way we were working together was like a mom. Like, what's a greater compliment than that? And here you have flexibility, the front environment, the high pay, and the opportunity to have a meaningful career. To put all those four together, that is something you can't take for granted.
This is Career Forum. I'm Figi Barth, Director of Development for Sarah Schneer Institute. Choosing a career path can be so challenging. So many questions, so many things to think about. Who do you turn to for reliable information? Where do you go to hear about the experiences of others? Fortunately, you're in the right place, because here on Career Forum, we have answers. Get ready to hear from top professionals who will share their journeys with you and give you a candid inside look into the many aspects of their fields. This is knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Our guest today is Adela Avson, whose many job titles can make you dizzy. From See It to Sarah Schneer's own indomitable Crown Heights coordinator and everything in between, Adela is one of Sarah Schneer's biggest in-house cheerleaders for the Masters in Ed and Special Ed. What is it about the field of education that gets her going? Adela, no one could give it over like you, so let's hand you the mic. Welcome to Career Forum. We're so excited to have you on today.
Thank you, Viggy.
For starters, can you just tell us briefly what you're doing currently so we know who we're talking to?
Sure. So I have a little bit going on in the field of education. I am the coordinator of the Sarah Schneer Crown Heights program. It is a undergrad and graduate program catered to girls and women in the community. We're beginning our seventh year, and it just keeps growing. And we're really, really proud to help so many people get an education in the right environment, and then, of course, go on to have meaningful careers. While I do that, I'm a professor in the graduate program. I teach courses on intro to special ed and methods of mathematics. I've been doing that. I'm just finishing my 10th year as a Sarah Schneer professor, 30 semesters, so I'm a little bit proud of that as well. Alongside that, I am the special service coordinator at Bates Rifkin High School. It is my alma mater. It's the school that I grew up in, and I've always wanted to go there, make a change, and be part of the community. So I started out as a math teacher when I finished seminary, got my degree, and fell in love really with the career of special education. And I came back to build up the special ed program. I just finished our 10th year there. We like to say it's our P3 dream team. And now we have about 15 providers and many, many students who are receiving services through my department. And I am one of their providers as well. I do the special instruction in math, as that has always been my passion.
Amazing. Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit now that we got, you know, the snapshot of where you're holding now. And let's talk about your background. Where were you born and raised?
I was born and raised in Crown Heights, which is in Brooklyn, New York. I come from a long line of educators. My grandmother was a public school teacher who then retired when I got to school, first and second grade, so she could teach me. So it was always something that, you know, my grandmother was a teacher. My mother, Maura Shira, she's a wonderful, loving first grade teacher for many, many years. And for me, there was no doubt I was going to be an educator. I was the kid that lined up all my little siblings and they had to listen to my lessons. In all of my yearbooks, it said, like, going to be the principal of Bates Rifkin or going to be a teacher. It's something I always wanted to be. I went to Bates Rifkin Elementary and High School throughout my years. I studied in Israel, in Beis Chana. It's a teaching seminary. And actually, on our interview, they said, just want to make sure that you want to be a teacher. And I thought, I want to stand out a little bit from all the other students who are all saying yes, just because they want to get in. So I said, actually, my plans are to be a principal one day.
That probably shook them up a little bit.
Yeah, so then the problem was that the rest of the seminary year, they kept saying, I'm like, the principal's here now, you know. I said, don't say something that you don't really mean. But when I came back, I started teaching, and it was probably even more exciting than I anticipated. I didn't think I was going to end up in high school. I assumed I was going to be where everyone else was, you know.
Maybe elementary school.
Yeah, younger children. And there I was, 19 years old, teaching 17-year-olds math that I was learning the day before.
Were you intimidated? Like, I need to know, the first day you stepped into that classroom, like, literally teaching girls your age, pretty much. Like, what were your thoughts?
So I always give advice to my students now as a professor, saying, like, you know, you have to do you. You can take advice from everybody, but you have to sound like yourself. That's your teaching style. There's so many teaching styles. You're going to learn theory of education. You have to be yourself. So I know that before I went into my first day of school, I got my first day outfit. I was very excited, but I was concerned because I had gone to high school with my students. I, in fact, was like the GO president. So I really know these students well. I was their head counselor. And I thought, what am I going to do? Just come in and be a whole new person? Like, hi, I'm Miss Afton and we're doing math. And I just couldn't do it. So I just came in the first day and I said, listen, we're friends. You know me as Adla, and I'm your friend at 4:45. But while we're in the class, I'm here to help you pass your regent. Like, it's not me against you. It's you and me against the curriculum. I'm here to help you. And that really worked. And that's kind of my approach always. I always say, like, I don't come in every day because I'm looking to discipline or I'm looking to give you a grade. I'm here to help you grow in your learning, in your time management. I'm a math teacher, so I always say in your problem solving. And I really feel like that is my education strategy.
Okay, so let's go back now to, you know, young Adela, you're ready to change the world, you're teaching. What were your degree plans at that point? Meaning, did you know you wanted to get a degree? Could you tell us more about, you know, your school kind of experience?
Absolutely. So I actually always loved math. So I thought I was going to become an accountant. My father's an accountant. I had two friends who were going to accounting school. And I thought, well, that's probably where somebody who likes math will end up. And my father said to me, he sat me down after seminary and said, like, listen, I love you, but you are way too social to be an accountant. You need to be with people. Not to, there's plenty of socialization when you're accounting. But he said, you're not going to like this field. You cannot go.
I'm not going to lie, Adela, that is not something I can see or visualize in the slightest, knowing you.
I'm like, then I'll be an actuary. And he was just like, you got to stay with people. So the truth is that in Crown Heights, I'll be very honest, higher education was really not something that was encouraged. It's not something that most people do. My father was an accountant, so I was familiar. My grandmother had grown up out of the community and had a degree and was teaching in public school, but it was really something that wasn't so common. So it took a little while to figure out, what am I going to do? I knew I wanted to go on. I knew that I was hoping to have a Chabad house one day, and I thought, I'm going to need a degree to open up a preschool or a school. This is something I need. So it really pushed me to do it. But I was a little confused. I wasn't sure what to do or where to go. And I worked on Sundays because I was a teacher and we have school on Sundays. And I really was a little stuck. Like, I've got to get this degree. I have to get started. What will I do? And, you know, it was before you could just Google, and most places didn't have landing spots. So you were kind of stuck. And my mother was waiting for me on the porch one day when I came home, and she said, Adla, I'm reading the Jewish press and I see an ad for Sarah Schneer. It's a program, they have school, and it's a front program, so, like, my father will be okay with it. And they have classes in the morning, so it doesn't interfere with your afternoon and Sunday teaching. Go there and try it. So I got into the car. I came to Borough Park, 14th and 47th. It felt like a different world almost, and I was completely by myself. Most of my friends had joined Turo after school, and I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go for education. And I walked in and I actually met Mrs. Leah Dunn. She had just started a women's program that was running on this time. And I said to her, like, I know this is an adult education program and I'm young, but, like, you have to let me join this program. I need to become an educator. And this is the only one that works for my schedule. So, like, I promise you, I won't disappoint you.
Meaning at that point, just to clarify, because I didn't realize it was only for adults. It wasn't for young girls.
So the girls had programs. It was Sundays.
Oh, so you were specifically joining a cohort of women.
Of women. And that's what kept holding me back, because the programs were all on Sundays. And here I worked on Sunday and I didn't want to give up my teaching career. And I kept saying to the principal, I might have to stop because I can't work on Sunday. And they were opening this women program. And because it was much smaller, it was the first year, it was actually a phenomenal experience since most of the students who are now educators were mature women who were going back to school.
Wow.
And they were coming back and I think I was 21 and I joined the program and it was a huge moment in my life. I went back to school. I was the first of my siblings to go for higher education. I actually remember calling my father saying like, don't worry, everybody is firmer, I'm dressed better and more tenacious than me. Like, this is a good environment. You don't have to worry about that aspect. And I felt very safe and I felt like I was going to learn a lot and I wasn't wrong.
And what was your first job straight out of school? Did you stay where you were or did you move on to something else now that you had this like kind of advantage of having a degree?
100%. And also the degree was special ed. There wasn't actually any special ed in high school, obviously, since I started that program 5 years later. So there was no place for me in the high school and it was hard to leave. But at that time, I knew that I wanted to. I had just gotten married. I had a baby, my daughter Chaya. I graduated and then gave birth 2 weeks later. So when she was about 6 weeks old, I said, I'm ready for my first job. It was about April, and I'm going to go be a CIT, which had this beautiful flexibility. You could pick your times. And you could work morning hours, which was something I was really excited about.
So for somebody who doesn't know what a CIT is, could you just tell me what the letters stand for?
CIT, S-E-I-T, Special Education Interant Teacher. It's a special educator who works in an early childhood preschool classroom, specifically for students from 3 to 5. So I did that CIT job. I had this big bag. And I went to 3 different schools. I had an hour, case here, an hour case there. When you sign on in April, that's what you get. And I actually enjoyed that because I got to see so many different schools in my first year and so many classrooms. And that really gave me a very broad view of what early childhood education looked like. And I remember my interview with Yelid Vialda, and they said to me, like, you've got a nice resume, but you've actually never been in an early childhood class. Like,
which is ironic based on your background and your, your grandmother, your mother, like it's
right.
Funny.
And I was this one that was like, I'm staying with big kids who talk and, who I can converse with. And I said something that I actually really believe still is that the principles of education apply to all grades, all people, all ages, your husband, your kids, like everybody learns the same way. So once you have a way that you teach learning, okay, the material changes, but the way you interact with students and the way that you manage them and the way that you communicate ideas.
And like really connect with them. It's true. Like the language of connection is really just across the board, whether you're 4 or 10 or 17, it's true. It's always the same.
And I say this to people so often saying that's why you can have a degree in education and you could change because I did. I spent 10 years in a preschool classroom after and then I went right back to high school and higher ed and I didn't feel any disconnect. I didn't feel any change because everyone's people, if you look at everyone like adults and with respect and you're looking to connect and, I'm so happy you said that, Figgy, because connection is key, which is, a little cliche, but it's really true. And something I had learned from my mom was that students became family. We had pictures of her students on our fridges. Sometimes we wondered like why them and not us, but mostly they came over for Shabbos parties. She went to every student's house on their birthdays. I know because I used to drive her. If wow. A student needed to host a bas mitzvah later on, they came and they held, it was in our home. So it wasn't about your job was in the school building and then you came home. This was your life. These were the people you connected with. And that's why for me, it didn't matter what grade level I taught or who the students were, what population, boys, girls. It was just making those connections with them, with their families, and then building that to really be long-lasting relationships.
What are some kind of like skills and qualities that somebody looking and interested in the field of education should have? So I feel like the ability to connect is like so, so, so important. Can you give us another few?
Absolutely. Obviously, I think there's a warmth that is very, very important because your classroom, you only learn from a person you like and in a safe space. So that ability to open up and embrace people and be there with them, especially in special ed, the struggles that they're going to have in school and the successes that they're going to share, you need to be open and willing for that. I believe you need to be dedicated since teaching is every day. It doesn't have flexibility. You can't come one day and take off another day. Your students are waiting for you. Your classroom is a community, and you're that leader in that community. And my students, they need me. There's a sense of, obviously, you want to be able to guide people with clear and explicit and instruction. And there's so much in the classroom that is with communication. When you're a teacher, you develop those communication skills. It's like you're on a stage every day, and you're speaking. You know, it doesn't matter what your audience looks like, but you're speaking to them, and it only makes you a stronger communicator, a stronger presenter. And those skills, I feel like, have been super developed in my teaching career.
Okay, so now I would love to go back to SEIT. Some people who are listening might be thinking about becoming a SEIT. So could you kind of give us a snapshot, like a day in the life of a SEIT? What are you actually doing over the day?
That is a great question. There are many, many wonderful SEITs out there. And some SEITs in the beginning are a little bit lost. Maybe that's the question they're having also. Like, what am I doing here? I'm like a big adult with small little people around me and little chairs. And I remember thinking that in the beginning, like, I'm quite tall, and I'm thinking, like, I'm just too big to be sitting in this classroom right now. Like, everybody is very small. But you actually have the ability to almost be like a second mother for your student. So a SEIT's job is ambiguous, which also gives you a little more flexibility, meaning as you get older in education, there's much more of a cognitive and academic goals that have to be reached. So you're teaching math, you're teaching reading. Of course, you're working on that social emotional piece. You're helping them in other areas as well. But your main focus is going to be that academic piece. When you're a SEIT, you're really looking at the whole child. You're looking at those five domains of development. Is there an adaptive piece? Do they need help with their self-care? Do they need help initiating play or sustaining play with a friend? Do they need help with their imagination and opening up? How's their communication? Are they able to have conversations over the breakfast table with their friends? Can they answer a question in class? And of course, early literacy skills, number sense skills. So you really get to look at the student and give them all those areas. And that's where you see so much change.
And this is in the classroom
setting. Classroom, children 3 to 5. So you're really in preschool. Now, you might do some pull out a little bit, maybe for a 20-minute session. They're young, so more than that is not really effective. Maybe just to target some very specific skills. But most of your work is going to be in the classroom, so you're pushing in. You don't want to feel like you're overbearing and you're sitting on top of a student and you're shadowing them. Nobody grows with that type of shadow. Everyone needs a little bit of sun. You're there to make the classroom optimal for their growth. So you might pull the student over with two friends and read a book and then ask questions that are targeted for your student, but everybody gains from that. A SEIT is very successful when the students in the classroom don't know who the SEIT is working with. When they stop and the kids say, there's my Mora, and the parents are like, I never heard of you. I'm like, that's great. I'm a SEIT in the class, and they think I'm a teacher. I'm doing a good job because I'm blending in. I'm going to sit with you over the breakfast table, and I'm going to help you ask someone to pass the milk, and I'm going to help you pour it so it gets into your bowl. I'm going to have a conversation about what did you guys do over the weekend, and why don't you start sharing first with my student? I'm going to go with you into the block center and help you move from making just a little 4-block structure to start saying, what if we start building a barn? Why can't we add a second floor? Let's include animals. If in education, you know, Lev Vygotsky, the theory of Vygotsky's development are really very key. And as a SEIT, that's what you're doing. You're scaffolding, you're pulling, you're using that social realm. You're using the classroom as an environment for growth. You're out on the playground. You're not watching the kids play. You're creating a game. Let's all, right, getting all the kids together. What about a wonderful game of tag or back and forth, or here's some chalk and let's get drawing, and then slowly pulling out so the student's doing it on their own. So you really get to look at a whole child, see where they need the help, and give them that targeted instruction as well as scaffold, that little push in each of the areas that they can use their help. You come to work, and when you're there, you can really be focused on that child. You're not dealing with paperwork. You're not dealing with a whole class. You can give that student the attention that they need and they deserve, and you're going to see tremendous growth. You will have to write some session notes at the end to document what you did. But when you're doing real work, it's not very difficult. And most agencies do have some form of support, maybe like a click type session note that helps you choose what skills you focused on, what goals you were looking to do, and how effective was your session.
So do you have a story, either maybe from yourself when you were a CEIT or as more like an overseer of others, that just illustrates like the type of growth that can happen through a CEIT?
Absolutely. I've had a couple of wonderful CEIT students that some I followed for a few years, and it was very cute. At the end of the third year working together, someone stopped me and they said, "Oh, your son." And I said, "No, this is, I only have daughters. This is not my son." And they said, "But you're always with this little boy." And I said, "He's just my student, but I take it as a compliment that you felt that the way we were working together was like a mom." Like, what's a greater compliment than
that's
that?
So telling of like the love that was evident in your interactions. That's really incredible.
And that some of my CEIT students have recently invited me to their bar mitzvahs. So that's about 10 years. That's very, very special. But I can think of so many students. I remember a student specifically named Yoni who really wouldn't want to participate in the davening circle, the group circle. And that was so much of the day because that's how we started and that's how everyone, you know, enjoyed. And then kind of realizing he just needed a little bit of individual attention before the lesson started, you know, not so he should seek attention and then later do negative behaviors. It's now there's positive. So right before class began, going out for 2 minutes with a special high, a special activity, and then going right back in, the student changed. I'm very into, obviously, understanding why behaviors happen. So when you notice a student is doing things, let's say, for attention, and you come in and you give that attention to them, and you put them with a little hello and just a little, even a special thumbs up or a special high five, this student is now your student. I always say, I didn't choose teaching because I couldn't figure out another career and I didn't get accepted to OT school and therefore I'm a teacher. Like, I'm a career teacher. Like, I wanna be in this classroom.
I love that.
And then they know that what they do is like the biggest nachas you can do for me is you do well. You know, like, all I want from you is don't buy me a birthday gift, right? You don't need give me a compliment, even though as, you know, getting older, I can use that. You look young. But for mostly, it's that you do well because my time is valuable. And if I made an impact and you did well, it was worth it for me.
I would love to hear more about your jump from, you know, working with those younger children to more of the administrative work that you've done. Like, you know, you were talking about coordinating those special ed services in your school. It sounds very intriguing. Could you tell us a little bit about that, what it entails?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a surprise. And sometimes when I realize I'm the director, I said, I don't even know how I got that title. It was very organic. What happened was is that I had a special ed degree, but I have been a high school teacher, and most people who stay in high school are really comfortable and they were there. And students started getting approved for services through New York City, and they were looking for something called a P3 provider. And they were having a hard time finding somebody who could help them with math. And the principal, Mrs. Lane, who's a mentor of mine and a wonderful principal, she said, I know one person who has a degree and who knows math, Adla. So she started giving out my number and I kept saying like, no, I have another job. No, thanks. But I started feeling very bad because it was more often and parents were saying like, we're desperate. My student has to pass the regent. My child, can you help? And so I took on one case here and one case there. But what I realized was that at night after 9 hours of school, for a student who struggled, I almost felt like it was torture to now have a student sit with me at night and now do math again.
Meaning like taking it home.
Taking it home. Like the day was long enough. And now it's like I didn't understand what was happening. And now I get to do it again and then send them back. And there was something about the system that I felt was very flawed. Like all this work had to be done at home. And it was becoming more and more often. So at that point, I had a conversation with the principal saying like, listen, I have a very meaningful career. I was in a preschool that I loved. At some point, I even invited, you know, I got my sisters to come work with me. So we were there together in a wonderful preschool environment. And I really wasn't looking to leave, but I said, okay, this is obviously something that's needed. Like, we have to make a change. So I said, I'm gonna try and go to high school in the afternoons and see what it's like, so that the 6 or 7 parents that kept calling me, I'll see their kids while they're in school and they won't have to come, because it was such a fight. It was like a double negative. It was math, which they didn't enjoy, at night when they could have been out with their friends. Very difficult. So I started in high school with 7 students. I was, you know, the sole provider there, and it was terrific. It was great. We worked together really hard, and the students all passed their regents. And
wow.
Then, you know, some of them were 11th graders. It was their third time trying to get through that algebra regent, and being part of that success, I realized this is important. At the same point, I realized that many of them couldn't really read even basic decoding. So I actually went back to train in Orton-Gillingham, which is a reading approach for students with dyslexia, because I said, like, high school, this is their last chance. Like, they're graduating soon, and if they can't read or get through basic math now, what's going to happen? But then the next year, more students were coming in, so I did a little more, and I realized I needed some help. So I called a good friend of mine from school who was also, you know, a special educator, and I said, do you want to come do maybe some ELA while I do some math? We'll work together. And then the next year, I needed another provider. So at that point, I was actually a Sarah Schneer professor. And I looked through my class, and I'm like, she looks really capable. And I'm like, Hindi, can you come help me in Bay Shifka High School? I'm not your boss. I'm just somebody who needs someone to work alongside me and help some great students. And this kept happening for 7 years. And one day in September, I looked down, and we're at like 50 students at 7 providers. And we're like, oh, like, this is a job. Like, this is this is like a whole coordination, you know, and like, everyone's like, who in charge? And we're like, no, we're like a commonwealth. Like, we all work together. But it just got so big, and with such amazing providers, that's really the secret key, that parents started wanting to send their students to the school, saying that, I know if my student needs help, there are people there that are trained specifically for high school students who can help them. So at that point, I started doing more of the administration part officially.
So it was kind of like an organic process. It was 100%. Like, it just made sense. You just like transitioned like nice and smooth because it just made sense. You were the first one there providing that help to the students and building it without even realizing what you were doing.
Without even realizing, without an office, without an email address. It was just, and it was literally one day when they're like, well, the special service coordinator of school is, they call me Mrs. B. And my married last name is Blasevsky. And I'm like, me? Like, no one even told me that's my job. Like, I'm just in my room doing my own thing. But I had to take on that responsibility because there was, you know, many things that would have to be done. There's a lot of paperwork involved, IEP meetings to attend, to coordinate, to be in touch with parents, the paperwork to decide what track a student should go on. So that grew organically to a place where we have many, many students and many, many providers. It's not that much more official because we still really feel like a team. And I don't say people work for me. I say we work together because I'm a provider there as well. And that really helps me understand the struggle.
I was going to ask, you're still also working with the students directly.
So I kind of get a lot of advice to move away from that. You know, like, now you're administrator and you need to kind of embrace that role and sit in the office and do that work. And there's 2 points to why I don't, is one, that the nachas and the real joy is with the students in the classroom. For me, I tell my students it's my vacation. I get to turn off my phone and just be a teacher. I don't have to answer emails. It's for me, 1 to 4:45 is sacred hours where
it's like you're in your happy place.
I'm literally in my happy zone. It's vacation for me. It's much easier than dealing with all the hard stuff. The second thing is that I specifically work with my 9th grade students. So I really know them, and I can guide them through the next few years of high school. And I can guide their providers. It's not like we're not guessing every year saying what works best. It's, I've explicitly taught the student. I know where their strengths are. I know what the struggle is. We also build a connection with the parents, and I can really help them. And I feel like this model is very unique and very special, but the feedback I typically get from the Board of Ed is, you guys really know your students. And that for me is the best feedback, because we're there on the ground every day seeing the students and helping them.
So I just want to bring out, Abela, something that's really striking me as we're speaking is how versatile your experiences have been with that one master's of ed. You've been a CA, you've been a high school teacher, you've been a, you know, a high school services coordinator, and you've been a college coordinator. So I just like want to talk about that. For somebody who is thinking about going in this direction and getting this master's of ed, I feel like it's important to just, can you list off some of the opportunities that can be available to someone with this master's, and just to clarify that it's not just about frontal teaching and there's so, so much more there. Can you give us like another few types of positions that might be available?
100%. So when I was a CEIT, after about 6-7 years, I did feel a little bit of, I'm ready to grow. And there were opportunities for growth into either going on to be a supervisor. I thought, well, I love teaching. Maybe I can share this with the next generation of teachers. So I called up the school that I had gone to, which was Sarah Schneer. And I said, listen, I know I'm young, but if you ever need a teacher, I would love to teach by you. I'm ready to give back to the next generation. I've learned a ton and I want to share it. And they said to me, you don't really have enough experience. You could send in your resume, but come back in a few years, Adela. And about 2 weeks before the spring semester, I was driving on the Verrazano Bridge and I got a call from my mother. She said, Sarah Schneer is trying to get a hold of you. What's going on? She thought maybe something like my degree expired. I said, I actually called them to see if they needed a job. And I did not know what to do. I told my husband, stop. Where he's like, we're on a bridge. I'm like, I don't care. I had to look up their number. I called Sarah Schneer and they said a professor just backed out in an intro to students with disabilities course. And would you want to come in for an interview? And now, as I was working in high school, this was exactly, and even see it, exactly what I was doing, dealing with IEPs, looking at different students, kind of helping them set goals. So I turned the car around. I'm like, I'll be there in a half hour. I came to Sarah Schneer and they said, listen, again, same concept. You don't really have any college teaching experience. Why do you think you could do this job being so young? And I said my spiel. I said, I was a high school teacher. I'm a preschool teacher. If you're a teacher and you understand how teaching works, it could be at any age. And give me a try. I'm so passionate. I will make this class interesting and the girls are going to love it.
And Adela, I would have hired you with that.
Now I know as a coordinator, like 2 weeks before the semester, you take what you get. I felt very good. At that time, I was the youngest professor who was hired. I came into the class. I stayed up. My husband was actually not so supportive. He said, but you have enough going on. You don't need this. And I said, you will not know I'm doing this. I promise. I used to get up in the middle of the night and prepare under my blanket so he wouldn't know that I was making PowerPoints. I used Prezi, reading books, putting it together. And I started teaching and I absolutely loved it. And I couldn't believe that I was with my degree doing 3 things in one day. In the morning from 9 to 1, I was in the preschool being a CM. In the afternoon, from 1 to 3:30, I was being a P3 provider, a special educator in high school. And then on Sundays and nights, I was now being a professor. Like, wow.
Four letters of MSed and 3 different, totally different jobs.
3 different jobs, and each one filling a different niche that I felt. Like the preschool job was for me a really safe, comfortable place where it was very social, enjoyable, and very, very quick. I'm not going to say easy because it's hard work, but like there was no stress involved. There was a, you know, a delicious little boy who was so happy to see me and we just got to enjoy each other, play games. I love that. I love toys. I love that type of conversation, easy. Then I came to high school and I felt like I was giving back to my school. So that for me was very, very important and my students. But then when I came to college, I was helping the next generation of educators. I was having the global impact that I've always wanted to have.
Right.
So it was like each part worked. And everyone said, why are you doing all of them? I'm like, because each one works for me in a different way. And that after a couple years where I had students from Crown Heights that were coming in, I saw Robin Meisels for the first time, the director of Sarah Schneer. I had never seen him because the hours weren't the same. And I stopped him and I said, you need to open a branch in Crown Heights. Like, enough of this that we all have to come here. I've sent more people to this program. I had sent my mother, my sister-in-laws, my sisters. Like, at this point, I was being the Crown Heights referral point just because I believed in it. And they said, well, we don't know anyone who could open the program. If you want to open it, almost like a joke, like, go for it.
And they didn't know who they were talking to.
Sent that email. they didn't know who they were talking to. I seem like friendly and, you know, like it was coming out of nowhere. I'm like, I'm opening this branch. And I did. The thing is, I want to say, Figgy, is that not every educator should be an administrator.
That's a very important point. Thank you for saying that.
But there are a lot of people that want to go into administration, and my rule goes the other way. You have to have been a teacher to be an administrator. You know, in math, we have where it can go some ways, not the other way, right? Like, to be an administrator, to understand what your teachers are going through, to understand what the school policies need to look like, to understand the procedures, the management, or even what needs to be fixed, I do believe that every good principal and every good administrator has to have spent time in the classroom. There are some schools that really believe that you need to still be in the classroom while you're an administrator, that you need to be currently teaching to keep that up. I'm someone who believes that, which is why I guess I'm still teaching. So maybe I need to be talked out of it. But I want to know what today's students look like. I don't want to base it on the students I taught 12 years ago. I want to know the challenges today in technology. I see it. I see the phones, right? Like, you want to do that. But there are many good teachers who belong in the classroom because the skills you need an administrator are different. Administration requires a lot of tough conversations.
Being okay with confrontation, I would say, right?
Being really okay with confrontation. Sometimes, you know, I just completed registration here, and sometimes you have to give really beautiful feedback, and sometimes you have to give some harsh feedback. And my husband was listening to me outside, and he said, I do not want your job. no matter what, like, this is something I would never want. You have to deliver, like, harsh news to people sometimes. But I always say, but it's in a way of growth. So you're able to do it when you know that I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you in the long term be successful. I'm here to help you in the long term make the right decision. But telling students, you know, that they didn't pass the class or that there are some issues, and hiring teachers and sometimes having to let go of things that are not working, these are tough things. Now, remember, you're the reason that the school is going to run well. And you have to be okay with stepping back from the interaction with students, which so much of us crave. I know for me that the more administration I do, I miss teaching. So it's hard for me to let go because you want to have that one-on-one, but somebody's got to do that work on top. Somebody's got to lead the ship.
So let's leave administration for a minute. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, some post-master's types of certifications that could be available. If you can give us a little bit more information like that.
Absolutely. So somebody who's getting a degree in education, and one thing, Fagie and I actually do open houses often about education.
We do.
We love saying, with your four little letters, MSED, you can literally do any job. Education is very broad, and the degree is very versatile. So a lot of it has to do with the experience and your personal strengths. I would say most people enter the education field in the teaching capacity. The teaching could be general ed, a regular classroom teacher. And again, that can be, I know, a Head Start teacher, a preschool teacher, middle school teacher, high school teacher, elementary school teacher. So there's plenty of teaching positions that are available. If you're going straight into special ed, you might work in either a self-contained or an inclusion classroom. You might work as a SEET, like we discussed, or a P3 provider, a special educator for students of the higher grades. But then you're going to want to push your career. Some people stay, and that's beautiful. Some people feel that need to move a little bit. They want to have more of an impact. They want to change it up. They've been an educator for a while. So they might do either even a postgraduate degree, which is more of like a certification. For instance, like I mentioned, Orton Gillingham, many people find reading their passion. They might train in Wilson, they might train in Orton Gillingham, Lindenwood Bell, and they might start opening a little literacy private practice, helping students reading. That's a big deal. Many people feel like they have an affinity to giving advice and mentoring other teachers. So they might go into coaching. There's a whole wonderful coaching community that goes in and helps new teachers with management, lesson planning, and even just specifics in English, history, math, ELA, going out there and giving coaching. You do not even need a separate degree for that. You might choose to get, you know, your SBL, which is like more of a student building leadership, but you don't actually need it. But some people who are doing it anyhow want to have that skill. That's something they might want to do. You might go up to administration, like we said, vice principal, principal. Many people start looking in other parts of special ed. I know many people that go into, you know, specializing, working with populations of students who maybe are hard of hearing or working with vision impairment, right? These are special educators who are specializing in one specific area. A very popular field is, of course, the ABA field. In the past, everybody was special educators who then went on to get their BCBAs. Now there are people who just get ABA masters, but I've heard from many people who run centers that the best path towards that is a special educator who has that broad view and then goes on to focus and specialize in ABA. So that is obviously a very large emerging field. There's a lot of room there and very popular. And I do find a lot of educators who find that that is a style that works for them and they see success will go on to become BCBAs or LBAs.
So Idala, that's very helpful to just have that like in mind that there's so many opportunities that can be available. But let's just be honest, the field of education really doesn't have the best rap as being like the most lucrative. Could you talk to us a little bit about like the types of salaries that we might be looking at in this field with some of the different types of specialties that you've mentioned?
I think that a classroom salary in a private school leaves much to be desired. And we know that, and that's a big yeshiva problem. That's not something I could solve here. When you get your degree, so first of all, there is an option to go to public school. I did mention that. I want to put that out there. People do choose to do that because, of course, there are benefits. Starting salary might be like $65,000, but it jumps to about $100,000 within a couple of years. Or if you have a specialty, if you're a special educator, plus you're getting pensions and you're working towards that. So I don't say that's what most people I know who are educators do, but that definitely is an option and it gives you a long-term plan. When you're working within the fields that we've talked about, so a CEET is usually making about $60 to $70 an hour off the bat, starting salary. You don't have to build up your career. And if you group students, it could be a little larger. You know, someone who's working as like a, you know, pendency type provider, a CEET for older grades is usually making a little more. $75 to $85 is normal. If you start grouping kids in P3 groups, you can get about $100 to $120 an hour. So you're talking about a special educator with their special ed degree doing, you know, maybe more than one student at a time is getting between, you know, $70 to $100 an hour. That's really nice rates. And typically you're picking your own time.
I was going to say, and in addition with, you know, to that is the flexibility piece.
The flexibility of Yom Tif and, you know, you're not well or you need to go away. You really have that flexibility. That is really, and you can work part-time. Very, very, very nice salaries. If you're going into like a Head Start class, right now I see the Head Start classrooms where you're looking at 9 to 3, but it is salaried. So it's not per hour, which there's a perk to that. You're working, you know, specific hours, you have an assistant, that's between about $45,000 to $70,000, depending on how long your day is, if you're UPK, if you're, you know, Head Start, but it's averaging about $65,000 for a year, for again, for not full time and for a nice environment. That is very decent.
And I would imagine that if you were to specialize in the reading or in the coaching and you're making your own business, then that's really where the numbers start to like.
Once you're going to a specialty and you're working with reading, you're talking about $125 to $150 an hour. Coaching is between $150 and $200 an hour. And again, you're working through different agencies or privately, so that will make a difference. BCBAs are making, I think, between $120 and $150. $50 for, again, starting. And then if you're really good, you'll get more. But there's opportunity. And I find that the starting salary, it's different than other fields where you need to work up your resume. You need to put in internships hours for 3 years. This salary is off the bat coming out of school and you will get hired.
You really made this work with, you know, raising a family. Do you feel that this is a good career path for a firm woman based on, you know, what we're talking about in terms of like, you can make your own hours. There's so many different ways that you can advance.
As a CEET, I used to say Hashem's gift to firm women was the concept of CEET, right? Where can you have a job that I worked in the beginning from 10 to 2:30? I dropped off my baby. I had some time. I went to work. I was back before pickup. Years that I, you know, things are busier, I took less hours. Years that I It's quieter. I'm able to take on more. And I still do that. I adjust how much I want to work with depending on what's going on with my life. In most places, you don't have that choice. And here you have flexibility, the from environment, the high pay, and the opportunity to have a meaningful career. To put all those four together, I don't know a job that has perks like that, except for special educators. You have the ability to be a little bit your own boss in a system. That is something you can't take for granted.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking to myself, Adela, like, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. I feel like the reason why you're unique is because you know that the grass is green on your side and you
and
like
I'm staying.
And you're staying on your side. So Adela, wrapping up, I would love to just hear, is there any, you know, parting words that you want to share? Maybe like a tip for someone, you know, thinking about joining this career, or just a question that you wish I would have asked, or just anything that you want to end off with?
So I want to end off with that. First of all, the schooling for this career is much cheaper than other careers, just to put that out there. I don't know why I actually value education. I think it should be more, but I understand we want to get people into the field compared to, say, speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, the medical field. It's very, very, very cheap. And that most of my students have paid off their master's within the first year of working. So not to hold student debt is a pretty big deal, and that you're earning right away. So the entry market into this is huge. So you don't have to commit to being an educator for the next 70 years. And like I said, every educator I know has grown and changed a little bit. I also feel like, Mirta Shem, everyone has their own children. And a huge perk of being an educator is that you're able to really have skills, I feel, that I try and I hope. I don't know, don't ask my kids, but I think I know I'm a better mother because of what I know. And it pushes me to push my children to be, you know, their best self. So that helps me in my personal life. And also, I feel like the teaching community is a very supportive community.
Wow. Okay, Adela, if somebody were to, you know, think of more questions after this, how could they reach you? How could they find you? Are you on LinkedIn? What would be the best way for somebody who wanted more information to reach out to you?
You can reach me on LinkedIn, email. I'm very responsive with my email, even WhatsApp. Afton at Sarah Schneer, reach out, and glad to tell you more about it. It's something I'm extremely passionate about, and I really want people to know that in this day and age, we need more teachers. We really need you. We need to educate the next generation.
Adela Afton is a special educator currently working as an education professor and Crown Heights coordinator for Sarah Schneer. Adela, it was a pleasure having you on today.
Biggie, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Career Forum. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends so that we can continue to provide quality information that helps you make informed decisions about your future. To explore possible career options, to speak to a career advisor, or to learn more about Sarah Schneer, please visit our website at www.sarasch.com or call us at 718-633-8557, extension 37, and discover how we can help you achieve your career goals.